Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
The Home Depot Home Improvement Show, brought to you in part by DryPro.
The Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. Answering your home improvement questions every Saturday on WPT. Presented by Charlotte Comfort Systems Heating and Air Conditioning and Acosta Heating, Cooling, and Electrical on News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WPT.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon.
I'm Dave Doble.
Good morning, David Doble. How are you?
Good, my friend. How about you?
Doing well, doing well. We made our 70-degree weather in February, early in the month, this month. I don't know what you guys did yesterday. We hit 70-plus down here.
I think it was close. It was very close. Felt like it.
Yeah, it's good. It's good. We're ready.
The flannel shirt came off, I can tell you that.
It's all good. It's all good. We're ready to talk home improvement for 2 hours. Folks, give us a call. We're at 704-570-1110. 704-570-1110. We'll talk about home improvement topics that are good for you. I have there's a couple interesting ones in the batch this week, David. In all manner of things environmental, one of the topics you and I have touched on but not spent a lot of time on is the whole idea of runoff. And not necessarily, don't use these chemicals because it runs off into, you know, lakes and streams and so on, or pollution sorts of runoff. But the fact that as we develop more and more areas, we put impervious surfaces down, and now just regular rain has to run off into rivers, lakes, streams, sewer systems, drainage systems,
right,
that normally would be absorbed into the ground. And that creates a reasonable level of complexity on several fronts, right?
Yep.
And so we'll take a minute maybe – well, we will. We'll take a minute this morning, and we'll talk about some cool things. I found some stuff out on the internet that I thought was pretty slick. You may already know about it, but this will be my little teaser. Just because if you're in an area and if you're like close to, I'm thinking, I'm not like wicked smart on this, but I'm thinking close to lakes, close to other bodies of water, or even close to technically designated wetlands and those sorts of things, which occur in all manner of places. The whole idea of runoff becomes a pretty sensitive topic and one that you have to consider, right?
Yeah. Probably even more sensitive if you're downstream. Because that's who they're. You might live out in the country, but they're probably the ones that are going to get blasted with it.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Right. So that's a really good point. And so we'll talk about that. And then we'll talk about just some basic maintenance things. And you know what time it is? It's deck time, man. People are already thinking, all right, getting out to do the deck thing. And actually, there'll be a nice little tie-in, I think, between our water runoff conversation and some decks, because that actually could be a relevant or related conversations. We'll save all of our heating, cooling, and air conditioning questions till next week when we've got Zeke and Scott in. So won't go down that, but just a lot of little construction kinds of things,
right?
To get people's minds turning. We're at 704-570-1110, 704-570-1110. David, anything? I haven't asked you in a while about email world because we've stayed steady with callers and topics.
It's pretty slow. I have to check every once in a while to make sure that it's open. And I mean, not to be selfish, sometimes it's kind of nice because when I get inundated, I'm usually busy. I'm busy all the time. So I mean, I can't even believe that it was just. It's already 7 days since we did this show before, so that was like, wow. But yeah, a couple. Hey, I do have one here that I just want to, in case this is a real email, but Amy NM sent a note in, but she had an attachment, and is asking me to open it, and I'm just like, we don't open attachments like that. So yeah. It's a Word document. You know, if there's something, and I don't know if it's an estimate or what it is, but Amy, if you're listening, again, send it, just copy and paste it in the email body and send it to me, because I'm not going to open it.
PDF would be safe, wouldn't it?
I guess a PDF could be safe. I just don't know how, you know, these days I don't know that much about that stuff, and I'm not that smart about it. So, you know, if it's a picture, usually the pictures are already open, so I can see what they are when it opens, but I usually don't open any attachments because I don't know why people want to do that, but they do, and they do it every day. So, you know, if I see anything suspicious, you know, it's not that we're not avoiding you or not trying not to answer it. Just, you know, we have to be careful because it's, you know, this is our personal equipment we're using here. So
there you go.
I don't need it to go down because somebody's feeling frisky out there. And I don't know what they want to steal from us, but everything we have is free.
I was going to say, sometimes folks just like to mess stuff up, you know?
Evidently.
I just like to mess stuff up. All right. Well, Amy, we don't believe that's the case with you. If it is, shame on you, but I doubt that. So great. I hope you listen and can get some stuff back to us that way. All right. Let's do this. We're going to be close to a break, so we'll slide away for a break here. This is the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. We are ready for your calls at 704-570-1110. We do want you to send us emails without attachments to askjohnanddave.com and click on the questions button. And we will be back to answer your home improvement questions and talk about home improvement when we return from these important messages.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
Welcome back. It's the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon.
I'm Dave Doval.
Give us a call this morning. We're at 704-570-1110, 704-570-1110. We'll talk about what's important to y'all. So where do you want to start, David? Let's see. I got, let's just do just this. This, I think, was a hangover. I think I made a note from last week because we had a caller. I can't remember the gentleman's name. He might have been the guy. I can't remember. I made a note to talk about how to actually make the adjustment on a pressure reducing valve. Because number one, it's, in my opinion, counterintuitive. And then number two, it's something that should be done, but people don't know where it is, what it is, and what to do with it. So what is it, where is it, and what do you do with it?
Oh, with the reducing valve? I mean, it's generally on the main line where it comes in. It's supposed to be right. You should have the valve where the water comes in the house, the valve, and then the pressure reducing valve will be right beside it. It's just a little brass looking device. Looks like it's got a little cone on it, and then there's a nut and a screw sticking out of the end of it. And they can be adjusted, and I can't tell you for the life of me if it's clockwise or counterclockwise.
Well, I have to look it up every time, but I didn't look it up this time, but I'm sure. Look it up. If you have to make the adjustment, you'll find it under watts. If you just Google watts or Google adjusting a watts pressure reducing valve, but the reason I say it's counterintuitive is. You either screw the screw in tighter or out looser, right? And you loosen the nut at the base, and then you tighten that nut back down so the screw doesn't move once you make your adjustment.
Right, can't vibrate and
come
from
loose.
The pressure. Right,
right. And so my thought would be, hey, I want to turn the water down, so I'm going to turn it clockwise and tighten it up, or I want to open it up, so I'm going to turn it left to open it up. It's just the opposite. If you crank it in, you're actually letting more out, and if you back it out, you're reducing it. So I got to believe it's spring loaded, and you're just letting the spring out or pushing the screw accordingly. But you should still check it out to make sure, because this will surprise you. I get a lot of things wrong. Doesn't surprise my wife.
And that's where you get to the point that you feel like the water pressure has lowered. And then don't forget, those have a life expectancy. Mm-hmm. And it's been my experience that the spring corrodes in them and breaks. Is what fails. And so they have to be replaced. I don't know if they sell a rebuild kit. I think at some point in time in my life, I bought a new one and opened up the old one and took the parts out of the new one instead of messing with the plumbing, and just changed out the guts inside it, and it worked perfectly fine. I think it was just because the piping was so tight.
You couldn't get
in. Yeah, it wasn't in a good position, and it wasn't put in very well. They're better now, and I don't know if you've seen them. They have them with shark bite fittings. They mm-hmm. have them with PEX fittings already made on the ridge PEX fitting, to where they could be clamped on. I like the idea of the shark bite because they can be removed fairly easy with a removal tool.
Right.
But they also have them built now with the gauge, and they may have been, but I'm seeing them more often with the gauge built right on them.
Yes.
Which is great.
So yeah.
You can see the pounds, the PSI. So makes it nice.
Mine failed. You know how I knew it failed? It just started whistling.
Yes.
Yeah. And then, and I guess I could tell you a thousand stories. The true one is I used to go downstairs and cut all the water off and turn it back on, and it would dislodge whatever was whistling and everything would be cool. And then it would start again. Finally, I'm like, yeah, maybe I should replace this. Mm-hmm. Anyway.
But you should, but adjusting them, I think the thing is, if you're going to do it yourself, they make a gauge that you can put on your outdoor spigot, and you turn it on. It's threaded for that. If you have a laundry sink, you can do the same thing there, and then you can adjust it to get that sweet spot of 50 to 60 pounds per square inch of pressure, which is really what you look for. When you get much over that, what I usually find, John, is when they're failing, that they have low pressure. And when they're I've never seen one that went the opposite way, where it went up. So, and they may be designed that way.
All right. I don't know. Which would make I took my own advice, which is not common. And I looked it up. If you back it off to the left, will lower the pressure, and to the right will increase it. Here comes Mike. Let's see what Mike's got. Mike, good morning. You're on the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. How are you?
Good morning, guys.
Morning.
Thanks for taking my call. My mom and dad live in Calabash, and they moved to a house about 3 months ago that it's about 20 years old. It's called Meadowlands. It's on a golf course, and mm-hmm. it's like established neighborhood and everything. And mm-hmm. it's a brick home, and it's got an addition on the back of it that's a sunroom. And they've recognized that they were losing their heat, and they had somebody look under it, and they realized there's no insulation under it. Mm. There's windows on three sides. One window goes into the kitchen, and two windows are exterior windows. And the back wall, of course, was the original wall, I would imagine.
Yeah.
And so what they need to do is obviously they'll put the insulation under it, but they also need it up top. My yes. dad was literally considering, I don't know if we need that. No, I was like, yeah, you absolutely yeah. need it. They blow insulation in, and so I'm just trying to get some hints as to how they – I know how they do it, but how would they – their concern is repairing the drywall when they make the holes for this. Or will they go inside the house upstairs? And that was what I want you guys' opinion on.
Well, if there's access from the existing attic into the attic into the sunroom, I don't know how it's built. So, if it's a gable roof, a triangle attached to the back of the house, then there's likely to be access from the other attic. So. They would just go into that attic and the main attic, and then into the other one and blow it in there. Now, don't know if they're soffit vents. They'll have to put some baffles in so that they don't blow the insulation down in the soffits.
Okay.
Will have to happen. So an insulation company they'll come and they'll investigate that and figure it out, unless you guys are going to try to do this yourself. If you are, then you need, and you can rent the equipment, you can certainly do it yourself.
Yep.
You just need to make sure that you don't fill the soffits up with insulation and block off the ventilation to whatever venting. I don't know what kind of vent, if they have a ridge vent or even if it is vented.
I think that's a ridge vent. And as far as the soffit, there is soffit there on the outside, so they would just take that off and look under there. And when you say put a baffle in, is there a quote-unquote baffle, or do you just fabricate something that will stop
you can
blow up the insulation?
You can buy pre-made baffles, and what they do is they're much easier to put in before the ceiling's put in. But what it does is it attaches to the top plate or to the sides of the joist, and it's stapled down, and then it folds up and goes up against almost against the ceiling or the bottom of the roof deck, and it leaves a 1-inch airspace.
So that the air will flow.
So the air will come from the soffit vents, but it becomes a dam for the insulation so that it can't fill into the soffit.
Go to the store and buy the styrofoam version of it. Mike, I promise you, I've done both. The styrofoam thing is just super easy. It's rigid. You can slide it down without getting on your belly and going all the way down there, and you can staple it at the top, and it works like a champ.
Yes. And the one, John, they have a couple of different types.
Good point.
One is for blown-in insulation, and then the other is for bat insulation. You can use the styrofoam ones, and then what the insulation guys do is they'll put a styrofoam unit that just fits against the roof deck. It's waffled so that it has raised and low and high spots. And then they'll roll up a piece of R13 or R15, and they'll stuff it down at the bottom.
Stop it from moving.
Yeah, well, and then it hits the plate and the ceiling and in between the joist, and then it hits the... it will hit the styrofoam that's stapled to the ceiling. And John's right. Depending on how it's built, you can't get down in there. You are laying down your stomach. But if there's no insulation, it makes it a lot easier.
You walk on the
absolutely. Yeah,
but take a piece of plywood.
From getting to it.
Take a piece of 1/2-inch plywood up there, and just obviously you can't get a real big piece, but as big a piece as you can get up there, and then move it around. When you're done, just leave it up there. You don't have to bring it back out. But
yes.
But that's pretty much it. And then under the crawl space is pretty much self-explanatory. Just put lots of tiger teeth to hold it up.
So. I've done that many times. I used to do remodels, but I've never blown insulation. I mean, I've had guys do it. If they do not have access, like there's a band there or something that they can't get through to see that space up there, and they have to drill holes and shoot in through the drywall. Is that common? And
no, not in the ceiling, because you have to keep it out of the soffits. So at that point in time, you may end up.
From that end, they can get to the soffit. I know we can remove the soffit and put up a barrier there, like you said.
Right.
Even if we fabricate something and just leave the space so that the air can flow. But
we're getting ready to run out of time.
Hey, Mike, hang tight. Hang tight for a second. We're right up against a hard break that we've got to take here. We'll pop you on.
You guys answered me.
Okay.
You guys answered me.
Well, I was going to tell you, I cut a scuttle hole.
All right, hang tight. Hang tight, Mike. Folks, it's the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. We're going to put Mike on hold so we can slide away for a break. Give us a call. We're at 704-570-1110, 704-570-1110. We'll talk about whatever questions you have regarding home improvement when we return to the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. Welcome back. It's the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon.
I'm Dave Doval.
We're at 704-570-1110, 704-570-1110. We're going to do our Home Depot product of the week this week. Super simple, super great. It's the Ryobi One Plus. So you know it's good. It's going to be part of that whole One Plus system. But it's a One Plus 4.75, so 4 3/4 gallon wet dry vac with battery and charger, under $150. Why do I love it? Well, it's part of the OnePlus system. So all those things that work, all the other stuff that you got and all the other stuff that you're going to get works for that. It's less than $150. And David, it's a 5-gallon vacuum cleaner. Why do you carry a little vacuum cleaner around with you?
Suck the water out of the toilet.
It's just handy for silly little things like that. And it's stout enough to do the work you got to do. So if you don't need this massive shop vac, using that brand term, but a big, you know, commercial or wet dry vac, it's the perfect solution for home and for auto. So that's it. It's the Ryobi OnePlus 4¾-gallon wet dry vac with battery and charger for less than $150. That's it. That's our Home Depot product of the week. David, you mentioned something before Mike called. Did you get Mike squared away? Is he cool?
We did, and I just so we could share the rest of the conversation with our audience. And he was talking about maybe doing it himself, but I think they're going to get a price on it. And and I just told him this has kind of been my experience with that. Is a lot of times it's cheaper to hire them.
Yep.
You can't hardly buy the insulation for what they can bring it and install it for. And if it is close, maybe there'll be just a little bit more. But to eliminate that aggravation, if you've never done insulation before, or if you have done it, you know exactly what I'm talking about. And if you haven't done it, save yourself. You know, just let them do it. They're pros. They'll go in. They're in. They're out. But really, seriously, you most of the time you can't buy it at the store for what they can install it for. And I guess that's not a good thing to keep people from buying insulation.
No, our commitment is to give good advice. And so, and you and I were talking about this offline. If you're going to do something yourself and save some money, maybe you go back to changing your own oil. Because for $6,753.12 for an oil change, it's suddenly worth it.
Yeah, no
That's
kidding.
That's hyperbole.
I know, but but the point is well taken. So,
yeah.
Anyway. But anyway, but I think Mike will be in good shape. But, you know, he just was trying to he's doing this long distance, so he's trying to help his parents keep them from having an issue and letting the contractor take advantage. Or, he just wanted to make sure that he had all of his ducks in a row so he knows the right questions to ask, and I think that's good.
And now you know the rest of the story.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thanks for doing that. But I did note, David, that they live on a golf course in Calabasas.
I did. And
you may want to go consult.
I was more than willing to go down there. And I'm sure that my insulation contractor would go with me.
Oh, there you go. All right. Before Mike, we were talking about the Watts pressure reducing valve. And you mentioned that, you know, they've really kind of stepped up the game. You can get an integral pressure gauge, so you don't have to go out to a spigot and keep an eye on it there. And then you mentioned that it had shark bite. You know, they had versions that had shark bite connections and stuff like that. And one of the things that I had written down to talk about today was just, I've spoken with several people in the last maybe 2 or 3 months who've had issues with shark bite. And when you peel the onion back and see what happened, it was bad installation.
Right, operator error.
Yeah. Yes. So one of them was, so you can actually use shark bite fittings in connections that you make underground. Honestly, unfiltered, I might not do that, but you can. If you wrap them correctly. So I went out and looked at the most common installation mistakes that you can make with shark bite. The first one says it's unprepared lines, which really means two things. You don't have a straight cut on it, so you got to have a 90-degree cut on the either the copper tubing or the PEX or whatever it's going to be.
CPVC,
right? So you got to use a tubing cutter on copper, use a chop saw on PVC, and then if you're going to use the hand grip cutters, just be good with the PEX stuff, right? So that's number two. The second is wrong fitting or techniques. There are actually different types of shark bite fittings. And if you look really closely at the device, there's a little piece of plastic sleeve that sort of sticks out past the copper or brass, past the brass. One is tan, one is white, and one is gray. If you go to the Home Depot or to, I don't know about Ace Hardware, they may be more specific, but typically what you'll find is the tan version because it will accommodate CPVC, it'll accommodate all of the types of tubing, pipe, whatever, that you're going to put into it. White is for PVC only, and gray is for polybutylene.
Correct.
So get the tan is the answer, I think, that,
right.
that
so, you're looking for. So copper PEX and CPVC are the same diameter on the outside. So that's the tan one you're talking about will fit those three.
Right.
So, yeah. And then what's the next part is cleaning up the joint, right?
Bingo.
After it's cut. That's a must.
And so integral with that is you can buy a device. I've never purchased a device. I've always done the measuring myself. But you can buy a little gauge device, and you push your piece of plumbing into it, and you mark, push it all the way in, and then put a black mark with a Sharpie.
Yep.
That gives you your marker that says, unless you're that deep into the shark bite fitting, you're not fully seated.
Correct.
So, I measure mine off.
I do, too. I always measure it.
You'd be surprised. I'm like, okay, that's good. And then you look, I'm like, whoa, we got more to go, right? So that's an issue. And then the last one is something that folks may not think about. The devices are super easy because you can put the little orange piece on it and push it in and then remove the pipe, right? So you can depress it and take the pipe out. If you do that multiple times, or if you try to cheat and use like a pliers or a vice grips or something like that, you can do it. You can push down on that thing, pull your pipe out. But if you do that a couple times, you risk damaging the connections, and over a period of time, they'll fail. So they're great, but you got to kind of follow protocol.
Right.
So,
it's not to be removed and reinstalled multiple times.
Yeah, it's not for, I don't know why you would do that, but I'm sure there's a reason.
Well, I think if you were working on something and you weren't, probably if you weren't sure what you were doing and you had to take a pipe loose to cut it again or to do something else, I can see maybe where that was happening. But that's, you're exactly right. You cannot do it with those fittings. It just doesn't work out.
You might get away one or two, but you can't be on off. Or hey, I'm going to do this and then right. I'm going to put this in. Then I'm going to take it off. Put this in. I'm going to take it off. You just can't do that. All right, we've run past our break. We're going to go ahead and take it, folks. This is the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. We're going to take a little break. We'll be back to answer your questions at 704-570-1110 right after these messages.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
Welcome back. It's the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon.
I'm Dave Dolville.
704-570-1110. 704-570-1110. David, this would have to be a raised slab, not necessarily, but the skirt wall, a block skirt wall with cracks in it. What's up? What do we do? Shear wall?
That's probably the thing to do. I mean, I guess I would probably investigate why.
Why it's going, right?
Yeah.
It's got to be a footing underneath the pump you're failing.
That's what you would think, yes. So, you know, try to address that problem. And then, yeah, you could certainly go over it with shear wall. You got to have something with fiberglass in it, strands, so that it'll hold together. And I think that would be the best way. And if it's, you know, if it's already parged, a lot of times it's just a little bit of stucco over top of it, you know, a sand and mortar mix or sand and Portland cement mix, then you would want to make sure that's nothing loose, yeah,
right,
and then scrape that off. But that shear wall, we've done that a couple of times on some old foundations in the past times, and it worked really well, and it held up for a long time, as far as I know.
That's good. What would you do to check to see what's causing it to fail? I mean, how do you check those footings?
Well, I mean, what has to happen is they go in and they're looking at all different things to see if it's settling. So you could set up a laser level, and you check it multiple places and you can see if it's crashing. You're looking at the outside, to see, if there's water coming against the building, you know, is water washing by the building? Is there a swale? You know, all of those things. And, you know, and if you can't, if you don't see anything there, then you go automatically to the thought that, that it was just the soil was not bearing. It wasn't proper bearing for the footing. So it wasn't deep enough or the soil wasn't good enough. Pretty important.
I was going to say, especially if it is, if it's a slab application, right?
Where right. Well, and you're starting to see, you're going to see more and more of that as they develop, because let's be honest, many of the lots that are left are probably not the choicest lots to build on. So, if, you know, if it's not already developed in this, and it's in the city limits, now, you know, you get way out in the country, it's different because, you know, we're starting to move out, but you know, there's lots available, and they were available for a reason. There are lots that years ago many builders wouldn't build on, but you know, now they'll kind of build on anything. But you can. There's lots of things you can do. It's just more expensive. I mean, there's some really nice communities in Charlotte that the footings are sitting on caissons, so they drill holes or basically pilings that go down in the ground. And there's steel involved, and then they lay steel in the hole, they put steel in the footing, and they pour it all at once, and it becomes one because the ground's not suitable for the footing to sit on, so the footing's actually sitting on top of these caissons that are drilled down to solid ground. So usually it's a wet or swampy area where that happens. So it's, you know, I don't know what happens to you in the crawl space. I have a customer right now that's dealing with that, and their lot it is low, and they're putting some footings and some jacks underneath the kitchen to brace up a floor that was expanded too far. That was the eye joists were stretched out too far. Anyway, they dug down to put the footings in, and water, you know, the water filled up the footings immediately, but. And you know, and I know the owner's not happy about it, but it was the builder that did this, and the lot is low. The house is kind of mounded up on a hill, but the lot is low all the way around it. So the water is in the ground, and wet goes to dry, and it'll go into your crawl space no matter if you it just doesn't seem like it should do it, but it does.
It does. It so is. You can't, you know, fight nature. Yeah,
and you know, this builder new on this lot, because while they were building that, I'm sure they realized the water, if it was raining, of course, if they build it in the drought, they may not have known, who knows, but it needs probably a perimeter drain that drains in the inside of the foundation that drains into a sump pump.
Yeah,
you know, and then you rely on that sump pump to catch any water. It's done all the time in Charlotte. It's done all over. And it's what you have to do. It's not inexpensive, and it's you know, there's certainly better places you'd like to spend your money, but it is what it is, and you have to do it. So
okay, that is good advice.
I hate to see it, and I hate to ever have to deliver that message to people, but you know, it's better than the footings, it's better than the foundation failing.
True enough. Well, I won't go down that rat hole. I've just seen some other things done that in concept make sense, right? To try to accommodate all manner of different things on a less than desirable lot, but
right,
takes a little bit of work. And a lot of things can be done, but it really takes a minute and probably an expense that a lot of folks wouldn't want to go through. All right, this is a real simple one, David. Lighting a crawl space or an attic. You and I have spoken about, hey, everybody hates going up in the attic or hates going in the crawl space because it's just dark up there and who knows what lurks. Mm-hmm. Who knows what lurks in the attic or the crawl space. But just lighting it up makes a huge difference for maintenance, for getting down there, for seeing things that are going on. That so you're not just probing around with a flashlight. You can actually light the entire place up. But that posits the existence of some power down there and stuff like that. What's the best way to bring power up into the attic For lights and or into the crawl space for lights. I mean, well, there should be power there to start with, shouldn't there?
Right. If you have any equipment, if there's equipment in serviceable equipment in the attic or the crawl space, then there's already electricity. There's supposed to be an outlet, and you have to have a convenience light. So if there's a convenience light, you just tie on to that light fixture, your electrician, or if if you're comfortable doing it, it's not that hard. You set boxes and you install light fixtures. The most inexpensive thing is just a it used to be called porcelain. A porcelain fixture, but they're plastic.
Plastic now. You can still get some porcelain.
Yeah, but. You can. But you put a fixture in there, and I did my. That's what I did, and I just put LED bulbs.
Yeah, which will last 100 years.
And if you happen to leave them on, they don't make heat. You don't have to worry about them catching anything on fire. So you could do that. But they also have bulbs that are plastic that aren't hanging down, because I did have broken one off moving by it, not paying attention. But I think we put 6 or 8 lights underneath the house, and you can't, unless you get right underneath the light, you can't read, but you can certainly see from one end of the crawl space to the other, which is nice. And I still take a flashlight, so if I have to examine something up close, I can see it, but you don't have to be worried about that. So but it sure makes it nice just to be able to flip the switch on when you go in and it's all lit up.
Yep, it does. And I did, like, I don't know, like I do overkill in lots. And I put the original ones I put up there were those big halogen ones, because it was really before LEDs, were priced where they are and bright. But you can get an LED light now in there. I mean, it'll light up the night sky if you wanted to. All right, good way to go. Just I think I personally, I don't know what code says, but I personally think that that's a do-it-yourself project, because you're just, running Romex off a and stapling it to a framing member and get rock on with your bad self. Yeah. In my personal opinion. But if code says otherwise, you must follow code.
Well, I mean, you technically can do your own electrical work, but you're supposed to get a permit, and they want you to take a little 20 question test down there to know if you know the difference between your right hand and your left hand.
Okay.
I mean, that's what you're after.
And I know we're gonna be. Jay's got a question about gutters.
Let's try it.
See if we can get him in. Hey, Jay. We're gonna be close to.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning. We're gonna be close to a break, so if we got to put you on hold, we will. Go ahead.
Okay.
What was the question, Jay?
Oh yes, I was wondering what I'm looking to upgrade my gutters. I'm in the woods, oak trees. Got the 5-inch gutters. Looking to upgrade to 6-inch because I don't know if it's just me, or lately we've been having these torrential rains.
Yeah.
And I keep my gutters clean and all, but this seems like they overflow more than they ever have. And
okay,
I've got a basement in the house, got everything graded right, so my priority is to keep the water away from the foundation and all. I'm looking to upgrade to a bigger gutter.
Sure. Hang tight. We can help you with that, but we just got to do the whole thing. It's the Home Depot Home Improvement Show. We're going to get Jay's question on gutters taken care of, and any questions you have at 704-570-1110, 704-570-1110. Stay tuned, because we'll get Jay squared away, we'll get you squared away when we come back to the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave.
The Home Depot Home Improvement Show, brought to you in part by DryPro.
The Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. Answering your home improvement questions every Saturday on WPT. Presented by Charlotte Comfort Systems Heating and Air Conditioning and Acosta Heating, Cooling, and Electrical on News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WPT.
Welcome back. It's the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon.
I'm Dave Doval.
And we are happy to have your calls. Did we lose Jay?
No, I've took him off. I checked to see if he wanted to hold, and okay. I answered him. But we can talk about that.
Tell me, what do we decide?
Well, he's going to just go with oversized gutters and downspouts. He just said that, that with his basement, having a basement, he wants to ensure that the water goes in the gutters. And he said both of the guys that came out and gave him estimates on the gutters and a separate estimate on gutter covers. And then, both told him that he said on heavy rains, the water's going to shed off of them.
Right.
It's what it does.
Yeah.
And he said, at least they were honest. And so he's going to just keep things the way they are. He's just going to put a larger gutter. But he cleans his gutters regularly, and he does have downspout piping. So he even blows those out and looks to make sure that the debris is coming out at the other end, so he knows it's flowing, which is good, because a lot of times I tell people you have to find the ends of them and mark them, and then when it's raining, you know, or you can stuff a hose down in there and see if there's water coming out. You need to make sure that they're not stopped up, because if they're stopped up, the water's not going to come. It's going to come over the top of the gutters eventually. So. Yeah. So anyway, that's where he stands, and I think 6-inch gutters and the oversized downspouts, and he'll be in better shape.
Perfect. All right. There we go. Give us a call right now then. We're at 704-570-1110, 704-570-1110. Here's one, and I'm like, there's more to this, I feel like, than meets the eye, but is there a way to patch a pinhole in copper pipe, or I guess PVC pipe, without replacing, you know, an entire line? If it's PVC, super easy to do. Well, actually, now with Shark Bite, it's easy to do the copper as well. But I feel like in the past I've seen, like, and probably still available, just a clamp scenario that had a neoprene gasket. And then you clamped either side of the pipe and screwed them together.
Yep.
Is that still available?
They are available. My neighbor has that problem. With his copper under his house, his copper is very thin now because of the acid.
OPH,
acid, yeah. The acid well water that was used in that house for years. He's now on city water, but he springs leaks pretty regularly. And I was going underneath there and helping him repair these pipes, and that's you know, I showed him Shark Bite, which is what we did, and we would replace, because he would have three or four holes, so we would cut out a section of pipe. His problem that we're dealing with is that if you aren't very careful with the pipe cutter, you collapse the pipe because it's so thin. It does not have the rigidity that it needs. So these clamps are going to be the better thing. And the next time he has a leak, that's what I'm going to get him. I had a whole string of festoon lighting, which is nothing more than a socket on a cord. And I had a string of those, and he doesn't like going in that crawl space. Well, I don't like going in his crawl space either. So I strung those lights up for him, and I donated them to him. And I said, here, you can have these. I said, all you got to do is plug this in, and then he's going to have these clamps from now on. So if he has a leak, he'll open it, put it around the pipe, tighten up the screws, and he's done. He's out of there. So
there you go.
It'll solve that problem. But the truth is he really needs to replace all the piping.
I have a friend at work who here had to do that in Atlanta, had pinholes popping everywhere. And
and here's the thing. He's just seeing what's going on underneath the house, or when he knows that they're leaking, who knows what's going on in the walls.
Yeah.
You know? And it's a ranch house, which is the only saving grace. And we'll just stop there because it's not worth talking about at this point.
Yeah, no, it's problematic.
I feel bad for him. So,
okay, all right. I mean, at least there's temporary solutions. But like you say, what's going on in the wall cavities could be a little scary.
Yes.
All right. I have a stainless steel sink and it's stained. Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. What up?
Well, I wonder, is it rust or?
Yeah. I know, truth be told, you can get a pretty inexpensive stainless steel sink that will have little rust, but it'll get rust spots on it. I can't even begin to explain why that is, other than it's just low quality. I won't speculate on its country of origin or anything like that. Let's call it like water stains or different things with hard water. You can take like a Scotch-Brite pad and some stainless steel. They make a cleaner for stainless steel. They use it on appliances and sinks and anything.
Works
stainless
pretty good, steel. Too.
Works pretty well, right?
Yeah.
And I want to say that I recall that it almost leaves I don't want to say a film. That sounds bad. But it leaves something on there that kind of helps the water and stains be less prevalent. I remembering that correctly?
I think it's like a little coating. Yeah, it's. I don't know if you want to say it's oily, but
yeah,
it's,
I don't want
but
to
it's oily.
But it kind of is.
Yeah.
Let's call it lubricate it. I don't know, but it does. It kind of helps if you get smudges, particularly on like appliances, right? Dishwashers.
That sounds like the companies when they tell you, say, well, this is turning yellow. And they said, well, ambering is normal.
Okay. It's ambering. Yes.
So it's yellow. Well, it's ambering, sir.
Yes. Yellow's bad. Ambering is good. But anyway, I think that's a super simple solution. And I would recommend it because I do think it makes it easier to clean like little fingerprints and smudges off over a period
of time.
It does,
and you can just wipe again, and it you kind of pick up a little bit of the residue that's on there, and it just fills back in. So eventually you wipe it all off, and then you have to spray again. But it's good for getting fingerprints and cleaning it up. We use it. I have some at home. I use it on the grill doors outside underneath the
that makes sense.
Under the bar, and it works pretty well because it gets water spotted from the water running off of the top of the countertop. So,
yep. All right, let's see. We got Simone there, but we got to take a quick break. So let's do this. Simone, we see you. Do not go away. We have good information for you, particular to flooring, and we'll share it.
He's still talking with her.
Oh, okay.
There he goes.
There we go. All right. Now we're going to, Simone, now you're on hold. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be back to answer your home improvement questions at 704-570-1110 right after this.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
Welcome back. It's the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon.
I'm Dave Doval.
704-570-1110, 704-570-1110. Give us a call. We'll talk about what's important to you. Right now, we're going to talk about what's important to Simone. Simone, good morning on the Home Depot Home Improvement Shows. How are you this morning?
Good morning. I'm good. How are you guys?
Doing well.
I love your show. I have a question. You helped me when I first laid my floor down, my LVP, but I made a big mistake. Half of my downstairs was carpet and the other half was hardwood floors. And so we took up the carpet and I laid the LVP. But what I didn't realize was to put something up under that LVP to raise it up so it would be the same level
right. If
I put the LVP over the hardwood, because the hardwood is glued to the cement.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So now I'm trying to figure out what's the best thing to do. Do I still just lay it on top of the hardwood? And I guess there's maybe a connector, or do I need to go back and pick up the LVP that I already laid down? Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, John, my thought is that it's pretty hard to lay something down, and it's more expensive to lay something down to bring that floor up, especially if you're covering the existing hardwood. And if you've already laid the LVP, you really don't want to take that up. Have you put anything over the Have you put the LVP over the hardwood yet?
No, I haven't.
Okay, so. I mean, as much as I hate to say this, it would be easier to take it up. And I know it sounds crazy, but they actually have tools that are electric you can rent to do that. And so
to take up the hardwood.
It'll scrape it up and clean it off, and then you can scrape up the glue with a razor stick, and then you can lay the LVP down. So you don't have that transition. If you choose to leave it, then you can make a transition. It's just kind of clunky, as it's a technical term, but it's not a smooth transition.
A step up.
It's a little step up, so it can be a little bit of a trip hazard. And if it's not an issue for anyone in your family, then I say that's the simplest way.
So but to take up the hardwood, how hard is that? How hard is that part of it?
There's some effort in it. There's a couple of ways to do it. They make a machine that you can walk behind that will scrape up. Most of the pros use a hammer drill with a special insert that goes in it. It's like a big spatula is the best way to describe it. But it, mm-hmm. it what it does is it vibrates and it goes underneath and it pops the hardwood up. It is not easy to do. It's a job. I always tell people for me it's a young person's job. Usually a young man's job is what I say because that's usually who's on the job sites. But it's a young person's job. I don't bend over all that well anymore for any length of time, so I'm not going to do it. But
it's the walk behind version is good. If you do a handheld version, it's a young person's job with significant upper body strength and endurance, right?
Right.
That hammer thing has got some oomph, right?
Well, it's got weight to begin with.
It weighs probably 7 or 8 pounds, maybe.
Right.
And then you got the vibration part of it, and you're sticking it up underneath the wood to pop it.
And you have to push on it to get it, because it doesn't operate unless you put a little pressure behind it. So,
in other words, I need to hire somebody.
That's kind of what we're getting to.
All right, Simone.
Unless you're just real ambitious.
Points to you for intellect.
Yes. The walk behind is really made more for smaller pieces of tile. That's the reason the guys use the basically essentially a jackhammer is what it is with a special blade on it.
And
that's what they use. That's what they do. It's a demolition hammer is what they call it. And it works really well, but it depends a lot on the operator. So if you need some help with that, if you want to send me an email, I can get you connected with a guy that can come in and do it. And they lay the flooring. They actually are. It's pretty reasonable for what they charge, and they do a really good job. So,
I'll do that. I'll sit. Yeah. Now, question though, we've already bought the LVP.
Yeah.
Would they still be willing?
Yes,
to do the job?
Yeah. He'll put down whatever you have. They're happy to do it, and they'll do the trim for you, the quarter round, shoe mold, whatever you need. They'll do all of it.
Okay, great. All right, thank you so much. Love you guys.
Thanks for the call, Simone.
Thanks, Simone.
Have a great day.
Thanks.
Simone figured it out.
Yeah,
you can get the transitions done, but I don't think you're going to like how it looks. I mean, you can say, okay, that's a nice, clean solution, right? But you still have that step up, and
that look. And that's what happened with us when we built the house. Was we knew we were using LVP. We talked about using hardwoods in some places, and we would really like to have done that. But I was going to have to go back in and bring the other subfloor up to close to the height of the hardwood, and then put down the LVP, because we did not want LVP in our kitchen. I mean hardwood in the kitchen. We had that before, and just didn't want to do it again. I've had it in several houses, so. Anyway, we went LVP through the whole house, and I think we made the right choice. We're happy, and it's all one level, and it's good.
Yeah. It's, I was sharing with you off air. I put, life proof stuff in a little office area, and, love it, but going to handle the transitions even differently than what the manufacturer.
Yes.
Or
and there are ways, and if you have a table saw and the know-how, you can make some pretty nice little transitions and cut out the backs of them and do some different things. And that's good. If you could do that, that's good. I've done that before with some hardwoods, different heights and hardwoods, and it makes it really nice.
Yeah. It's a good solution. It's a great product. I know last week we talked about, hey, let's not, totally dismiss our sheet vinyl friends, but
it's
way more durable.
And I really like the LVP. I like the Life Proof. What a nice floor.
Yeah, it's awesome. That's what I just put down. It's got a lifetime warranty for my application, right? 25 years commercial or something like that.
Ridiculous. It's thick. It checks all the boxes. It's good stuff.
Let's see. Let's check in with Daniel here. Daniel, good morning on the Home Depot Home Improvement Show. How are you? Hello,
hey, Daniel. You there?
Yes, I'm here. How are you guys?
Doing well.
I have a question about some copper piping in my house. It's an older house built in the 90s, and we noticed that there's starting to be green stains on our fixtures, and when we fill up the bathtub, it's a little bit green.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something we should be concerned about and maybe change out the piping?
How well water?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
I think it merits your attention. David, I'll let you weigh in, but I think you want to get the water tested. If you're getting consistent green staining, it's possible that your pH is low and the water is dissolving a little bit of the copper and then redepositing it. You can clean that up, but the problem is if it's dissolving some of the copper, there's less copper there, and it goes back to what David was talking about with his neighbor, right? The walls on that pipe are getting thinner, and you run the risk of leaks. And David, if that's like panic, then back me off. But I feel like that's a scenario.
You can't. Yeah, it's straightforward, and it's the only way that you can say it. And then that is exactly what's happening: is the pipe is. The acid is eating away at the pipes little by little. You guys are getting plenty of copper in your diet, I can promise you that.
Is that a bad thing?
No, copper's not. That's not that bad for you. So,
okay. Your fingernails might be tough to cut, but other than that, everything's cool.
So,
I don't want to turn green or anything.
Right? No, you won't. Not anytime soon. But you will. Eventually, you're going to have a problem. And I'm not saying that it's not thinned out now enough that you could start having problems. But what needs to happen is that water needs to be treated for the acid water, because it's not really good for the fixtures. And you really want to be higher on the pH scale anyway for your drinking water. So if you go to waterboss.com, they have a acid neutralizer that you could purchase and you put in line and you treat the water. But John's right. The first thing you need to do is get a test kit and test the water.
Okay.
And check that immediately and see how if the water's hard. Because you could buy a couple of pieces of equipment, and the Water Boss stuff is fairly inexpensive, mm-hmm. and it's pretty easy to take care of and maintain. And the folks there will help you. They'll talk you through all of it. Now, whether or not you want to try to install it yourself is a different thing. You need to pick a good place to install it where you can service it. I say service it, I mean, you have to put, if it's a water softener, you need to be able to add salt to it easily. And then once a year, you'll have to add a product to the acid neutralizer because it does have a consumable powder that goes in there. But that will get your water back into get it up into the 7.0 area where you need it. And then if the water's hard, you want to make sure that you don't have to, but it's better if you can get it softened up just a little bit.
Yeah, we definitely have a water softener, so that's.
Okay.
All right.
Then the acid neutralizer beside that, in line with that, is the ideal situation, and it's waterboss.com. They sell them at Home Depot, so you can special order.
Okay, I'll have to check that out.
All right, man.
So no concern on changing out the pipes or anything?
No, hang tight, Dan.
I'll finish them off the air.
We're right up against the break. It's the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. We're going to slide away for a break and be right back after these important messages. Welcome back. It's the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon.
I'm Dave Doval.
Give us a call. We're at 704-570-1110, 704-570-1110. Let's do our Home Depot product of the week. This week, it's a Ryobi One Plus 18-volt cordless 4 3/4 gallon wet-dry vac cleaner with a battery and a charger under $150. I love this for like a lot of reasons. Number one, it's part of the One Plus system. So all those other tools and devices that you've got that operate on the One Plus system, this one goes right along with it. It also includes a battery and a charger. And I don't know, I just like the idea of having the extra batteries. The charger, it's a good deal. It's still under $150. But David, it's 4 3/4 gallons, like 5 gallons. Let's just call it 5 gallons. It's compact, right? So
yes.
I think you carry a small wet dry vac just to suck the water out of toilets when you're changing out a toilet.
Yeah,
right?
I have one specifically for that. I have other wet dry vacs, but I get that one just for that.
It's perfect. And so it's easy to store, doesn't take up a lot of space, easy for automotive, easy for home improvement. It's got a wet dry filter in it. I love it. It's a great little device to have around the house, and it's not super expensive, less than $150. It's the Ryobi One Plus 18-volt 4.75-gallon wet dry vac with battery and charger. There you go.
Yeah, very nice.
I do like it. I do like it a lot. I love those One Plus things. They're good.
I'd like them. I mean, sometimes people say, "Oh, I thought you were a professional," and I said, "You know, I have some of these drills that I've had for 15 years.
Yeah.
And I have the dark blue ones. You know, they change that color to that lime green.
Right, right. the blue and gold ones, yes.
Yes, and I still have a few of those, a sander, and I have a caulk gun of that color. But I have many of those tools. I probably have 10 or 12 batteries. Just because, but I keep batteries in those and a lot of those tools that I use regularly, and you know, three or four chargers, so you know you're ready to go. You know, if you're doing it on a professional level. But I think here was my philosophy on the whole thing was, as I buy some of the more expensive tools, if you drop that thing off of a ladder and it shatters or breaks, you know, then there's many tears shed as you have to go buy another one. I don't mind so much if I have to buy another one of those products, and I'm on my third or fourth multi-tool of the Ryobi, because we use it and the brushes, now I have a brushless one, I think it's going to last much longer, but they get too hot and that was the problem. But they're not very expensive for what they are, and it just never bothered me. But I have to say they hold up pretty well. I mean, I'm been quite happy with those tools, actually. So.
They do, and I work with a lot of folks who equip literally hundreds, in some cases thousands, of tech vans across the country, right?
Right.
And that's their tool of choice for exactly the same reason you said. It's durable, it holds up, and if something happens and they have to replace it, they're not getting, you know, taking out a loan or calling somebody on Wall Street for some kind of major investment.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
So right. Yep. Good stuff.
Good deal. All right. Here's one, David. Releasing rusted or frozen bolts. It could lend itself to the conversation we just finished. But I don't know if you have a secret sauce. I've used Blaster in the past.
Yeah, PB Blaster.
Yeah. And that's – so let's be clear. If a bolt is going to be released and undone through the threads and stuff, that will do the trick. Sometimes all the PB Blaster in the world and whatever else, my dad used to use Coke, which should scare you to death. But sometimes it's just not coming up. I mean, if that thing is just totally...
Right.
Rusted together.
Well, if you can't get
getting a blade out, you got to get it.
If you can't get the product around where the rust is or where it's seized up and get it down in there, then you're most of the time you have to use something with this impact. So you need vibration and for it to try to turn at the same time is
like a nut driver.
Yeah.
So cut the as much of the rusted part off as you can, and that could be a reason. Like, well, I don't have something to cut it. That's why I want to do that. But if you can cut whatever is sticking beyond the bolt, the nut, and then use like a nut driver with a you can you have less thread to clear,
right?
Once you free it up, right?
Correct.
All right. Hey, let's just throw this in there for grins. This was a hack that we put out like 5 years ago. If you've got a regular screw, like a slotted screw head that is stripped and you got to get it out and you don't want to do, you know, use an extraction bit, take a flex tool or a hacksaw and cut the groove deeper into the top of the screw head and then go at it again.
Yep.
It works.
It works. Works.
There we go. That was
well.
For free. I think you said earlier, though, everything we do on here is free. So
yeah,
there you go.
It's free.
It's free.
I told you that once that I had a woman call me and ask me a question, and I gave her, I think, a two or a three word answer because that's what it required. And she wrote me back and she said, "You call that an answer?" And I said, "Well, it was free." So
what did you want?
Well, I don't know what else to tell you. I gave you the answer.
I prefer those short answers. Sometimes you ask a question and like, "What time is it?" And they tell you how the watch was made.
Mm-hmm.
That drives me nuts. Yeah, all right.
You'll notice most of my email responses are to the point.
So. My favorite one is "got it" or "excellent, thanks." All right. Excellent, thanks. Let's take a break. We're at our last break here, so we'll go ahead and take it. Folks, give us a call. We're at 704-570-1110, 704-570-1110. Or if you want a quick free answer from David, askjohnanddave.com. Click on the questions button or questions at askjohnanddave.com. We can handle it that way as well. Don't go away. We'll be back for our last segment right after these important messages.
Schneider Tree Care, expert tree care specialist for WPT and for you.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
Welcome back. It's the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon.
I'm Dave Doval.
704-570-1110, 704-570-1110. That's the number. Give us a shout. We'll talk about what's important to you. Let's see. I'm going down the list here, David. Here's one. A noisy garage door. Steel door. Makes a lot of noise going up.
Yes. I'm just going to tell you. I'm going to share this. You know, I built the house and I built my shop first, so my garage door went up on it first to get me protected. And it's had a lot of cycles, and it's a really good garage door. It's a wrapped foam door. I have a side-mounted door opener, but the rollers on it were nylon, which were very quiet, but they were not bearing, and I did not know that. So recently, I've had a string of failures with the door. It keeps throwing the cable off. So little by little, I've changed the cables. I changed the drums. I ended up changing the shaft because it came off so many times that the shaft was getting too beat up from the screws, the set screws being tightened and loose and tightened and loosened. Changed the springs. Even had the door got jammed out of position so many times that it bent the tracks. I couldn't straighten up anymore, so I changed the tracks. Finally, it was still acting up, so I said, well, I'm going to change the rollers. So I changed all the rollers the other day, and I put a sealed ball bearing roller on there. It is amazing the difference that it made. It's quieter than it was, if that was even possible, but it has taken all of the stress off of that door because there's no resistance. So you have 12 rollers, and if they all exert a little bit of resistance on that track, you essentially are putting a strain on the door opener, the cables. And really what's happening is the door opener's trying to lower the door, but the door's not rolling as well as it should. So what it was doing was it was turning and it was making slack in the cable, and the cable kept jumping off. And so that's what the problem was all along. I just didn't realize it. Anyway, that is the most inexpensive thing you could do. I bought those rollers through Home Depot. They were like $29. I had to order them online for 12 rollers.
That's not bad.
It's not bad at all. As a matter of fact, I ordered two more boxes the other day because I'm going to go ahead and change the other two doors out on the house just because it needs to be done. But it'll lengthen it'll give more cycles to the door opener because it's not going to strain it as much. It's going to give more cycles to everything on the door. Just simply because it's taken all of the stress. It's unbelievable how much easier it rolls, and I am really not exaggerating. I was shocked, and you know, and I'm around this stuff all the time, and it was in the back of my mind the whole time. You should probably change the rollers. Change the rollers. Well, guess what? I changed them, and now I basically have a brand new door.
That's interesting, because I would have said, oh, just make sure you have nylon rollers. But you did that, not surprised. You did that initially, and that still wasn't the final solution.
No, and the rollers were. And I had some extra rollers, so when I had the track off, I changed some of the ones that I thought might be bad.
Problematic, yeah.
But the thing is, there was no bearings in there, so even though it was a quiet nylon roller, it was just a roller, a nylon roller spinning on a shaft that was having resistance. So if it gets a little bit, you know, it's constantly moving and changing. I mean, a garage door is not a precise instrument. Okay. So they move left and right. They float.
Well, they're metal also. They're metal exposed to hot sun and cold. And so on.
Exactly.
They have to have latitude in them.
So it's changing. So there's a tip for you right there, an inexpensive way. And it's not that hard to change, the rollers. I just took each hinge off individually.
One at a time.
Now, the bottom roller, you can't take that loose because that's under tension with the cable. So what I did was I loosened up I took the track actually loose at the bottom, the first two screws, and I raised the door up manually and rolled the track out of the way, slid the roller out, and that was it. They make a track bender. Have you ever seen that, John?
No.
But they make a bender, and it actually, what it does is it flattens out the track on the curved side, and then you roll the door to that position, you pull the rollers out.
Oh, that makes sense.
You change
it, and then just slide it out.
You put it back in, and then you beat the other end of it. You stick in the track, and you beat it back down, and it's a form to reshape the track. But you know, if you don't do that every day, you're not going to go buy one of those. So, and I wasn't, so that's why I did what I did, and it made all the difference in the world for $30, right?
Yeah.
And you know, 30, 45 minutes of my time. So
here's a silly question. Rather than mess with the track, could you not clamp the cable to the track and then have the tension clamped?
I wouldn't.
You afraid?
I would not take that bracket loose. I would not take the screws out of that.
Okay.
Because you have to pull it completely loose.
Yeah.
No.
I'm glad you said that because I might have tried that.
Yeah. No. Don't do that. Don't do that. You don't want to mess with, if you're not familiar with that stuff, you don't have winding bars, you shouldn't be messing with that spring because it could kill you.
Yeah.
I mean, let's face it, but if it doesn't, it would maim you. You never want to put your face in front of the bar while you stay off to the side. And it's hard. I mean, there's 30, I have to put 30, like 32 cranks per spring on that 16 foot door. So, or that 8 foot tall door, because that's what it's based off of, and it's a lot, man.
I remember the Wayne Dalton garage door people had an enclosed version of that you could put a drill on and get the torque you needed.
That would be ideal for the novice. If you don't know what you're doing, I mean, you can watch a video and do it, but you need to have some strength. You know, we talked about that earlier.
Yeah.
All right. It's hard, but anyway, that was the cure to mine, and I'm telling you, it's worth it to do it, and that's why I said I ordered two more boxes of rollers. I'm changing the other ones out this weekend.
So. Boom, done. All right, I had no idea. I had no idea this was such a sensitive topic for you.
Well, if you knew how long that door's been aggravating me,
maybe I should have asked Gina.
Yeah.
I can see where that one would bother you more than Gina. As long as it went up and down, she'd be cool. All right, let me ask this question because you said something else. You said you were describing your door, and one of the things you said was insulated.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of doors out there, like just a production builder might just put a regular steel door in that's not insulated. Can you go back and insulate? I have suggested people go back and do that.
You can.
With like a pink dowel, like the rigid dowel styrofoam. What
I would probably use a foil faced. And I would glue it in because that's your biggest problem is you have to cut it. You have to stay fairly thin because if it usually has a C track.
Can't go outside the track. Yeah.
Right. So it has to be inside the door. So, you know, they're bent on the ends for a reason on the top and the bottom of the panel, and that gives it strength.
Rigidity.
But you could take your insulation and you cut it to fit, but you would have to bow it a little bit so that it would unbow inside the door and then it would be secure. But I would probably put a little glue on it. You know, you could use caulk. You could use anything that'll stick to metal and styrofoam.
Yeah, you want to have a latex version, though, of some sort that stays flexible, because I'm afraid a polyurethane would eat away at the foam, unless you put the foil side.
Well, yeah, you'd have to have foam. You would have to have something that is for the foam.
Yeah.
And it'll tell you on there, so you can't just use any type of glue you want on foam, because you're right, John, it'll eat it up, because it's a petroleum.
Yeah.
Most of it's petroleum-based, so... yeah, it's worth it. It's worth it to do it. If you're buying a garage door, I'm working with Zeke right now on his house, and we're doing a garage for him. And that's what we talked about, was getting a fully wrapped door, because his grandsons play basketball there. And if they bounce a ball against it or whatever, you're less likely to have a dent. Does make it a little more rigid. I chose it because all my garages on my shop and my house are insulated, and so it only made sense to have an insulated door. And you know, on the coldest days, our garage, you could go out there. My shop is really never below 40 degrees.
Yeah.
So, and I have no heat in there, and I chose not to heat it. I can if I want to, but you know, I just put on a coat.
Yeah. I noticed that in this last cold snap here that I don't have any heat in the garage either, but I did have insulation in the walls and insulated doors. And I think the coldest we got in that cold snap in the garage was about 56, 54, 56, yeah. Something like that.
So you not can't, too bad. You can't not beat it.
All right, I got to slide this in before a break because I said we'd do it at the beginning of the show and we just never got to it. And we can spend more time on it in subsequent shows. I'll make a note. But we were talking about just runoff and in a scenario where runoff is really controlled and monitored exclusively and you want to put a deck in, somebody's going to say that deck is going to have an impact because now the soil under it is not going to absorb as it should. I found a product called, let's see, Deck Tech, DekTek. And it's like concrete deck pieces. So you'd love that, right? I like the idea. It's not a composite or a wood, but the installation of it addresses most porosity or runoff solutions. Mm-hmm. So it goes through the deck, hits the ground, and I'm reading some of the specs here, so you'd have to check with your local folks. But I looked at the pictures on it. If you want to check it out online, I mean, I'm not trying to sell this. I don't get a commission or anything. But it's DekTek.
Makes sense.
And it's pretty.
Yeah.
It looks great.
Well, and that, what you're talking about is essentially like a paver deck.
Exactly.
Which a paver driveway, and that's why people... A lot of times that's spec'd out in architectural because it takes the water. It will still absorb water instead of letting it all run off. So when you see it, that's exactly what you're getting.
Awesome. All right. Got it in. We got to go. Folks, genuinely appreciate all the great calls this week. We love doing this. We hope it is as enjoyable for you as it is for us. We're going to go. We want to remind you, as we do every week, that we think the most important kind of home improvement that you can make is the one that makes your home a happier place to live. Don't forget to work on that project this week, and we'll see you next week when we return to the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave.
Schneider Tree Care, expert tree care specialist for WPT and for you.